I'd have a unibrow. Now, said Boo, tell the door of many where you want to go. Aru stared at the door. There were several symbols and scenes etched into its frame. Images of warriors notching their bows and letting their arrows fly. When Aru blinked, she even saw a wooden arrow zoom across the tableau. She reached out and placed her palm against the door. The engraved wood pressed back, like a cat nuzzling her hand, as if it were trying to get to know her, too. Take me to the other Pandava, she said the words breathlessly. She was right. Words did have power. When she said the word Pandava, all the feelings that came from discovering who she really was uncoiled like a spring jumping to life. It was not unpleasant. It was like riding a roller coaster and relaxing enough to let the initial panic turn into something else. Exhilaration, joy, anticipation. She was Aru Shah. Suddenly, the world she thought she knew had opened up, as if stage curtains had been yanked back to show her that there was so much more than what she'd imagined. There was magic. Secrets crouched in the dark. Characters from stories like the ones she'd been told all her life were taking off their masks and saying, I was never a tale, but a truth. And, the thought wiped off her grin, there was also her mom, now frozen with a worried expression on her face. Aru's heart felt like a painful knot inside her. I'm not letting you stay like that, Mom. I promise. The door opened. Light washed over her. Boo squawked. Aru felt yanked forward. Gone was the mild weather of Georgia. Everything was cold and bright. When she blinked, she saw that she was standing on the large driveway of a sprawling white house. The sun had begun to set, all the trees were bare, and right in front of her was a giant turtle? Wait, no. A girl. A girl wearing an extremely unflattering backpack. She stood with her arms crossed, and what looked like black war paint smudged under her eyes. She had a thick pen in one hand and a bag of almonds in the other. Are there bees in the other world? Asked the girl. She didn't seem very surprised to see Aru. In fact, her gaze was a little reproachful, as if Aru had arrived late. I don't know if I'm actually allergic, but you never know. You can die within a minute of a bee sting. A minute? And I bet there are no emergency rooms. I mean, I know there's magical healing and all, but what if it isn't enough? The girl snapped her eyes toward Aru, her gaze narrowing. I hope you don't have a bee allergy. I only have one EpiPen, but I guess we could share? I'll stab you, you stab me? Aru stared at her. This was the other legendary Pandava sister? Descended from a god? The girl started digging through her backpack. Boo face-planted onto the grass. Aru could hear his muffled sobs of, Why God, why me? 6. Look, but not really.
Your family must have gotten frozen, too, if you came here to find me, said the girl.
Her voice wobbled a bit, but she forced herself to stand straighter.
Any chance you brought cash, just in case? I couldn't steal my mom's wallet. It felt wrong.
She sneezed, and her eyes widened.
Do you think I might be allergic to magic? Is that a thing?
Stop, groaned Boo. Are you a Pandava?
The girl nodded.
Answer me, said Boo.
Aru towed him with her shoe.
She nodded yes.
I couldn't tell.
Maybe that's because you're face down in the grass?
Boo had collapsed on the front lawn outside of what Aru could only assume was the girl's house. It was so boring here. Not at all the kind of place where she thought another child of the gods would be. The grass was perfectly suburban, neat and not so green that it would draw too much attention to itself. With great effort, Boo rolled over onto his back. Sighing, Aru scooped him up and held him out to the girl.
This is our, enchanted assistant, sidekick, comic relief, etc., etc., said Boo.
He continued to lie across her palms.
Sometimes the heroes and epics are assisted by eagle kings and clever monkey princes. But it's been quite some time. The world is rusty at being dazzling, and so here I am.
Heroes got eagle kings, and we got a...
started the other girl. Aru coughed loudly.
We got a being of former renown and illustriousness.
Illustriousness was a word she'd once heard in a film, where people kept addressing a grand empress. Aru assumed that it meant illustrated, because the empress's face was certainly drawn on. No one had eyebrows like that. But important people didn't seem to take this as an insult. Even Boo gathered himself on her hands, shook out his feathers, and nodded. The girl shot Aru an, "Are you sure?" look. Aru shrugged. Maybe it had been a lie to make the bird rally his energy. Maybe it was the truth. Talking this way came easily to Aru. She had done it all her life. Looked at something not so great and told herself all the things that made it great.
I'm Aru.
The other girl blinked.
Minnie.
What?
I'm Minnie,
the girl repeated.
I mean, I guess you are short, said Aru, but
as in that's my name.
Oh.
So, we're siblings?
But not like related, like soul related.
Minnie seemed way calmer than Aru had been when she'd learned she was a Pandava.
Something like that? Answered Aru.
Oh.
There were so many things Aru wanted to ask. Minnie's parents must have told her about her true identity, because she was, in her own way, prepared. She knew what was happening. She knew that Aru had to be some kind of relation to her, because she too was a Pandava. But the situation didn't sit quite right. It felt as uncomfortable as walking in shoes a size too big. If Aru was being 100% honest with herself, she was the only person she was totally honest with. She felt a sharp pang of disappointment. But what had she expected? Often the amount of amazement she wanted to feel never quite matched reality. Last year, when she'd heard about the middle school homecoming dance, she had imagined something from a Bollywood movie, lights glittering, a wind out of nowhere, making her hair fly, and everyone breaking into a choreographed song and dance at the exact same time. When Aru had walked in, no wind had blown her hair, but someone did sneeze in her face. All the sodas were lukewarm, and all the food was cold. Forget about choreographed dancing. Aside from the cha-cha slide, which shouldn't count. The kids who were dancing, to bleeped out pop hits, were weirdly enthusiastic. A chaperone had to keep yelling, "Leave enough room between you for Jesus!" By the end of the night it was, "Leave room for the Holy Trinity!" And to crown it all, the air conditioner drew its last breath halfway through the dance. By the end of it, Aru had felt like she was wading through a steam of post-recess middle school body odor, which was, to put it bluntly, the worst. Meeting Minnie was better than a middle school dance, but Aru still felt cheated. She had wanted a sisterly smile that said, "I've known you all my life." Instead, she was faced with an odd stranger and a pigeon whose sanity was slowly unraveling. Maybe it was supposed to be this way, like part of a trial. She was a hero. Kinda? So maybe she just had to be patient and prove that she was worthy of her Pandava role. Only then would the magic happen. And so Aru fixed Minnie with what she hoped was her friendliest, most blinding smile. Minnie took a step back, clutching her EpiPen tighter. She didn't look like a reincarnated Pandava any more than Aru did. But Minnie was very different from Aru. There was an upswept tilt to her eyes. Her skin was light gold, like watered-down honey, not like Aru's chestnut brown. It made sense, though. India was a very big country with about 1 billion people in it. From state to state, the people were different. They didn't even speak the same languages. Boo lifted off Aru's hands and hovered in front of the girls' faces.
You're Minnie. She's Aru. I'm exasperated. Salutations done? Okay, off to the other world now.
Exasperated. How do we get there?
Asked Minnie. Boo blinked.
Let's hope you inherited some talents, since irony evidently eluded you.
I have an iron deficiency. Does that count?
Offered Minnie. Before Boo could faceplant once more, Aru caught him.
Don't we have somewhere to be? The sleeper is off somewhere freezing people, and if we don't stop him by the 9th day, all of them...
Aru gulped. It hadn't seemed so real until she said it out loud.
They'll stay that way.
To the other world, cried Boo.
It could have sounded really epic, like Batman hollering, to the Batmobile. But it was barely intelligible because Boo was squawking from inside Aru's cupped hands. She placed him on a nearby tree.
I don't remember how to get there, said Minnie. I went once, but I got carsick.
Envy shot through Aru. You've been to the other world? Minnie nodded.
My parents took my brother when he turned 13. I had to go too because they couldn't find a babysitter. I think all the parents of Pandavas are supposed to take them to the other world once they show signs of being demigods. Didn't yours?
Didn't yours. Aru hated that question and every variation of it. She'd heard it all the time growing up. My mom packed me a sandwich for the field trip. Didn't yours? My parents always come to my choir practice. Don't yours? Sorry, I can't stay long after school. My mom is picking me up. Isn't yours? No. Hers didn't. Doesn't. Isn't. Aru's expression must have been answer enough. Minnie's face softened.
I'm sure she meant to, and just never got around to it. It's okay.
Aru looked at Minnie, the flattened mouth and pressed together eyebrows. Minnie pitied her. The realization felt like a mosquito bite, tiny and needling, just enough to irritate. But it also made Aru wonder. If Minnie's mom had told Minnie everything, then did that mean their moms knew each other? Did they talk? If they did, how come Aru didn't know? Perched on a myrtle tree, Boo began to preen himself.
Right. So here's how to get there. You...
We're not driving? Asked Minnie.
Aru frowned. She didn't know much about magic, but she didn't think the other world should be within driving distance. Boo shook his head.
Too dangerous. The sleeper is looking for you.
Goosebumps prickled across Aru's arms.
Why?
She asked.
I thought he just wants to go wake up the Lord of Destruction. What does he want with us?
He'll want your weapons, said Boo. The Lord of Destruction is surrounded by a celestial sphere that can only be shattered by an immortal device like those weapons.
Aru was getting a headache.
Wait, so we need weapons to protect our weapons from becoming... weapons. But we don't have any weapons, said Minnie. Or at least I don't.
She turned pale.
Am I supposed to have a weapon? Do you have one? Is it too late for me to get one too? Is there a specific one, like only having number two pencils for standardized tests, or...
Silence! Shouted Boo. It is fine that you are unarmed. As for where you shall be retrieving these powerful weapons, I shall leave those instructions to the Council of Guardians. They will be waiting for us in the other world.
He flew down in front of them. Then he pecked at the ground while walking in a small circle.
The key to getting to the other world is reaching. You must grab hold of something invisible. Imagine it's a string of hope. All you have to do is find it and tug. Simple.
A string of hope? Said Aru. That's impossible.
If it wasn't, then everyone would go, retorted Boo.
Minnie pushed her glasses a little higher up her nose, and then reached in front of her, gingerly like the air might bite her. Nothing happened.
It helps to look sideways, said Boo. That's usually where you find most entrances to the other world. You have to look and not look. You have to believe and not believe. It's an in-between thing.
Aru tried. She glanced sideways, feeling utterly ridiculous. But then, incredibly, she saw something that looked like a thread of light hanging down in the middle of the empty street. The world was still. All the beautiful houses were at once close and also a millennium away.
Aru thought that if she were to reach out, her fingers would meet a thin sheet of glass. Once you've got a hold of the in-between, close your eyes.
Minnie obeyed, and Aru followed her example. She reached out, not expecting anything, but wanting desperately. Her fingers found nothing at first, and then she felt it, like a current of warmth. It reminded her of summer, those all too rare days when her mother took her to the lake. Sometimes there would be cold spots in the water, and sometimes there were swirling eddies of warmth, a bit of sun-drenched water ribboning around her. Or sometimes it was just because someone had peed next to her. That was the worst.
This felt like that, the warmth, not the pee. She grabbed the current, and something firm nosed into her hand. A doorknob. Not quite a doorknob, more like a bit of magic trying its best approximation of a doorknob. It was cold and metallic feeling, but it squirmed and tried to wrest itself from her hand. An indignant squeak followed when Aru gripped the knob a little tighter. All of her thoughts poured into a single command. Let me in. The doorknob made a harumph sound. She pulled. And where there had once been a bit of road, a shriveled crepe myrtle tree, and a slightly wonky-shaped mailbox, now there was a panel of light. Boo's wings rustled behind her. The three of them walked through that entrance of light. Well, Boo didn't walk, because he had decided to perch on Aru's head. Her eyes adjusted slowly. All she could see at first was a cavernous ceiling arching above her. They were in a gigantic cave studded with stars. Tiny lights flew past them. Bees! Shrieked Minnie.
Aru blinked. They weren't lights or bees, but moths. Moths with wings of flame. Every time one darted past her, she heard a whisper of a laugh. The walls were cloaked in shadow. There were no doors leading in or out. They were in a bubble. Aru examined the strange floor beneath her, off-white and bumpy. Each tile was a different length. In fact, the more she looked at it, the more it looked like...
Bones, said a voice in front of them. Do you like them? Took me ages to collect. They're really quite comfy to walk on, but mind the teeth. Some of those are incisors.
Aru stiffened. Minnie clawed into her backpack and drew out an inhaler. The little moths of light began to gather around a shape in the dark. One by one, they fluttered their wings and stayed still, as if they were buttoning up whoever stood in the shadows. The shape grew more distinct. Now it resembled a crocodile that had rolled around in Christmas tree lights. Only this crocodile was bright blue and the size of a three-story house. The crocodile was also grinning, either happily or, as Aru's growing panic was beginning to point out, hungrily. 7. The Council of Guardians.
Please don't eat us, please don't eat us, please don't eat us, said Minnie rapidly.
Eat you?
Repeated the creature, shocked. Its eyes widened. They reminded Aru of an insect's eyes, strangely prismed, like a cluster of television screens.
You don't look very edible. Sorry, I don't mean to be rude.
Aru was not in the least bit offended, but thought it wise not to point this out. Boo flew down from her shoulder.
Makara!
Guardian of the thresholds between worlds. Aru gawked. A real Makara. She'd seen photos of them, but only as crocodile-like statues that guarded temples and doors. It was said that the goddess of the Ganges River rode one through the water. Aru wasn't sure whether that made them mythical boats or guard dogs. Judging from the way the Makara was excitedly wagging its tail, she was going with the latter.
Make way for this generation's Pandava brothers, started Boo.
The Makara frowned.
They look more like sisters.
That's what I meant,
snapped Boo.
Wait, I recognize you,
said the Makara slowly, tilting its head as it considered Boo.
You don't look the same.
Yes. Well, that happens when one has been...
Boo's words ended in incoherent muttering.
The heroes are here to meet the council and receive the details of their quest.
Ah, another chance for the world to end. How delightful. I hope I get more visitors. I never get many visitors. Ooh, I don't think I've opened up an entrance to a claiming in, well, quite a while. I don't know how many years it's been. I was never very good with numbers,
said the Makara sheepishly.
Every time I try to count, I get distracted. Even when I'm talking, sometimes it's like... It's like...
The Makara blinked.
I'm rather hungry. Can I go now?
Makara,
growled Boo. The Makara cringed and hunkered closer to the floor.
Open the door to the court of the sky.
Oh, of course. Yes, I can do that,
said the Makara.
First, I just have to see that they are who you say they are. Who are they again? Or what? You know, I've never actually seen a vole, and I read about them the other day in a book about animals. Are they voles?
Humans, volunteered Aru.
Rather tiny for humans. Are you certain you're not a vole?
We're not done growing yet, said Minnie. But my pediatrician said I probably won't get any taller than 5'2".
5 feet, you say?
Asked the Makara. He rolled onto his back and raised his stubby legs.
I really think 4 feet are much more useful. 5 might throw you off balance, but that's just my opinion.
The Makara lifted his head as if he could see beyond them. Something flashed in his prism eyes. Aru saw an image of herself opening the museum entrance to Poppy, Ariel, and Burton. She saw the lighter flame being lowered to the lip of the lamp. Something else shimmered in the depths of the Makara's gaze. Aru watched Minnie discovering her parents, frozen on the couch. A movie was playing on the television screen. An older boy, who might have been Minnie's brother, was in the middle of tossing a basketball into the air. At first, Minnie curled into a ball on the living room floor and cried and cried. After a few minutes, she went upstairs and took out a backpack. She stared at herself in the mirror, reached for her mother's eyeliner, and made violent swipes on her cheeks. Then Minnie kissed her stiff parents, hugged her immobile brother, and went outside, prepared to face down whatever evil she was destined to defeat. Minnie, for all her worries about allergies and magical bees, was brave. Aru's face heated. Compared to Minnie, she wasn't brave at all.
"Well, they are who you say they are," said the Makara. "I hope the council trusts me."
"Me too," Boo harumphed. "I never lie."
Aru could not say the same for herself. Minnie was staring at Aru.
"You lit the lamp?"
Here comes the blame.
"I know it had to happen,"
said Minnie hurriedly, as if she had offended Aru.
"My mom told me that the sleeper was always destined to try to fight us. Don't worry, I'm not mad. There was no way you could have known what that lamp would do."
That was true, but still, Aru had known that she wasn't supposed to light it. The problem was, her mom had never told her why. So Aru had thought it was just one of those generic warnings parents gave to kids, like, "Don't go outside without sunscreen or you'll burn." Or as the woman who ran the local Hindu temple's summer day camp liked to remind Aru, "Don't go outside without sunscreen, or you'll get darker and won't find a husband." Until it happened, who cared? Aru had never gotten sunburned, and she really didn't need to find a husband at age 12. But there wasn't any protective lotion when it came to demons. It all boiled down to one thing. She wasn't supposed to light the lamp, and yet she had. The fact that it had been destined to happen didn't really absolve her of blame. Aru's guilt was beginning to roil in her stomach, to the point where she thought she might throw up. A bright moth hovered in front of Aru and Minnie and Boo. Its wings grew, and light curled through the air, like calligraphy made of starlight. The wings stretched and unfurled until the girls and bird were completely enfolded.
"Goodbye, inedible tiny humans and Subala," called the Makara, no longer visible to them. "May all the doors you face in life swing open and never smack you in the butt as they close."
The moth faded away, and they found themselves in an open-air room. No wonder it was called the Court of the Sky. Above them, the sky was marbled with clouds. The walls were ribbons of shimmering light. Delicate music laced the air. The space had that deliciously ripe aroma of the earth right after a summer thunderstorm. Aru wished the world smelled like this all the time, like honey and mint and bright green growing things. Beside her, Minnie groaned, clutching her stomach.
"Did I ever tell you I have acrophobia?"
"You're scared of spiders?"
"No, that's arachnophobia. I'm scared of heights."
"Heights?"
Aru looked down, and then she wished she hadn't. There was a reason it seemed like they were hovering above the earth. They were. Beneath her feet were two cloudy wisps, and beneath those, a very long fall through a lot of empty sky.
"Don't take off those cloud slippers," said Boo, flapping beside them. "That'd be quite unfortunate."
Minnie whimpered.
"This is where the council meets?"
"They gather on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and during full moons and new moons, and also for the season premiere and finale of Game of Thrones."
Speaking of thrones, seven huge royal-looking chairs floated around them. All the thrones were made of gold, except one outside the circle that was tarnished and rusty. She could only make out the letters UALA printed beneath it. The other names were easier to read. As she sounded them out, Aru gasped. She recognized them from the stories she'd heard and the artifacts her mom had acquired for the museum. There was Urvashi, the Apsara, the celestial singer and dancer who was said to be unmatched in beauty. Then there was monkey-faced Hanuman, the trickster who had famously helped the god Rama in his fight against the Demon King. There were other names, too. Names like Ulupi and Surasa, the Serpent Queens, the Bear King Jambavan, and Kubera, the Lord of Wealth. These guardians were immortal and worthy of worship, but they were often considered separate from the main league of gods and goddesses. When Bu had mentioned a council, Aru had imagined stern summer camp counselors, not the very people from the myths and tales that had been crammed into her head since she was a toddler. Urvashi was like a heavenly nymph queen, and Hanuman, who was the son of the god of the wind, was a powerful demigod. Now Aru really wished she were not wearing Spider-Man pajamas. It was like some horrible nightmare where she was walking the red carpet of a fancy movie premiere in an aluminum foil hat and rubber ducky rain boots. And why was this happening to her? Aru turned to Minnie. On a scale of 1 to 10, how bad do I look? 10 being burn your clothes. But then you wouldn't be wearing anything, said Minnie, horrified. So what you're saying is that I look horrible, but the alternative would be much worse? Minnie's silence was a very clear, yup. Better pajamas than skin, said Boo. Unless it's the skin of a demon you slayed, that would be fitting for a hero. Wearing heavy, stinking demon skin? I'll stick with polyester, said Aru. Polyester? That poor child, squawked Boo. For a pigeon, he looked thoroughly disturbed. Middle school children are uncommonly cruel. Perhaps sensing that the conversation was moving from stupid to stupefying, Minnie piped up. Why are some of the thrones only half there? Aru peered closer at the circle of thrones. Some of them were partly transparent. Not every guardian of the council is in residence at the same time, Boo said. What would be the point of that when the world isn't in need of saving? No one believed the lamp would be lit for another 10 or 20 years. They thought there was more time to prepare for the sleeper. Until... someone... He glared at Aru. Aru blinked innocently. Who, me? Beside her, Minnie risked a look beneath her feet and started swaying. I'm going to be sick, she moaned. Oh, no, you don't, said Boo. He hovered in front of her face and pecked her nose. You two are not going to embarrass me in front of the guardians. Spine straight, wings preened, beaks pointed. What's going to happen? Asked Aru. She didn't normally feel anxious about meeting people, but Urvashi and Hanuman weren't just any people. They weren't legends either. They were real. It is the duty of the council to deliver a quest. The sleeper is out there right now, searching for a way to get the celestial weapons and use them to wake up the Lord of Destruction. You must get the weapons first.
By ourselves? Asked Minnie.
You'll have me, said Boo primly. Great, because nothing says, come at me, demon, like a pigeon's sidekick, said Aru. Rude, huffed Boo.
It's not so bad, said Minnie with false cheer. Isn't the council meant to help us?
At this, Aru heard a laugh that sounded like someone tickling a chandelier.
And why should I want to help you? Asked a silvery voice.
Before, the space had smelled like a summer thunderstorm. Now it smelled as if every flower in existence had been distilled into a perfume. It wasn't pleasant. It was overwhelming. Aru turned to see the most beautiful woman in the world, sitting in the throne labeled Urvashi. She wore black leggings and a salwar kameez top, that would have appeared as simple as white-spun cotton if it didn't glimmer like woven moonlight. Around her ankles was a set of bright gungru bells. She was tall and dark-skinned and wore her hair in a messy side braid. She looked as if she'd just stepped out of dance rehearsal, which, given the fact that she was the chief dancer of the heavens, was probably true.
"This is what you brought back to save us? I might as well set myself on fire and save the Lord of Destruction the trouble."
It took a moment for Aru to realize that Urvashi wasn't talking to her or Minnie. She was talking to Boo. To the left of the celestial dancer, a deep voice let out a powerful laugh.
"You really hold on to a grudge, don't you? Hasn't it been a millennium since he ruined your outfit?"
The monkey demigod Hanuman materialized in his throne. He was wearing a silk blazer and a shirt patterned with forest leaves. His tail flopped over the back of the chair, and from one of his ears dangled a jewel that looked like a small crown.
"It wasn't just any outfit, you big ape," snapped Urvashi. "It was made from the skipped heartbeats of every person who had ever laid eyes on me. It took centuries to sew. Subala knew that."
"He's a bird. What did you expect?"
said Hanuman.
"Not a bird," shouted Boo. "And you know that."
Aru was so distracted by their arguing that it took a while before she felt Minnie tugging on her sleeve. She pointed at the tarnished throne, bearing the letters U-A-L-A. Now Aru could see where the other letters might have fit. S and B. Subala. Boo was one of the guardians, but he didn't seem like the others. He wasn't glowing and powerful, and his throne had been pushed out of the circle. What had happened?
"You know why I'm here,"
Boo said to the guardians.
"These are the chosen heroes of the age."
Urvashi wrinkled her nose.
"We've gone from training and assisting the saviors of humankind to playing nursemaid? No, thank you."
Aru blushed.
"We're not kids."
Aru? Said Minnie. "We kinda are.
We're pre-adolescents."
"That's the same thing. Just a different word."
"Yeah, but it sounds better," muttered Aru.
"Whatever you may be, there is only one thing you are to me," said Urvashi. "You are not worth my time."
She flicked the armrest of her throne and then fixed her dark gaze on Boo.
"Honestly, how did you bring two mortal children up here anyway?"
"The usual routes," huffed Boo. "And they're not mortal children. They have the souls of Pandavas. I know it to be true."
"If they really are Pandavas, then the irony that you are the one who has been chosen to help them delights me."
Urvashi's laugh sounded like gungru bells.
"But I don't believe you. The Pandava souls have lain dormant since the end of the Mahabharata war. Why would they appear now?"
Aru's skin prickled with fury.
"Because the sleeper is awake," she cut in, "and we need help if we're going to save our families."
Beside her, Minnie gave a grim nod.
"So you need to give us a weapon and tell us what to do," said Aru.
Hanuman regarded them solemnly.
"The sleeper?"
His tail stood straight behind him.
"It is as we feared then, Urvashi. Everything we saw, it is him."
Under Aru's feet, the sky disappeared. Static rippled in the air, and it was like she and Minnie were now standing on a giant television screen. Hanuman swept his hand over the screen, and images twisted beneath them. The first vision was of the street outside the Museum of Ancient Indian Art and Culture. A leaf caught up in the wind hadn't fallen. The only things that moved were the clouds. It was silent, but the silence wasn't pleasant. It was like a graveyard, lonely, eerie, and undisturbed. The second vision was on the suburban street where they had first found Minnie. Two boys had been frozen while arguing over a comic book. A girl playing basketball had jumped for the hoop and stayed caught in the air, fingers still gripping the ball. Beside Aru, Minnie let out a cry.
My neighbors! Are they okay? Did you know that if you don't have water for 12 hours, you could die? What?
The frozen do not suffer now,
said Hanuman.
But they will, if the sleeper is not stopped by the new moon.
Aru's throat tightened. All those people, people she had never met, they would be hurt because of this, because of her.
The sleeper is right on our heels,
said Boo somberly.
Looking where we last were.
Looking is too quiet a word for what he's doing. He's hunting, said Urvashi. Shivers ran down Aru's spine. But something didn't make sense. If the sleeper was looking for them, then why hadn't he just stayed in the museum when Aru had lit the lamp? He was definitely looking for them. She refused to think hunting. She was a girl, not a rabbit. But he was planning, too. At least, that's what she'd do if she were a demon. If your enemies were out to get you, you had to keep them guessing. It was like playing chess. You had to make the least predictable move. And to get to your goal, the king, you had to remove the defenses first. Has anything else happened? Aru asked. Urvashi's lip curled in disgust.
Anything other than the world gradually freezing, you mean?
She mocked. But Hanuman understood. His tail snapped upright.
The vehicles,
he said slowly.
The vehicles of the gods and goddesses have gone missing.
Aru knew from her mother's stories that when Hanuman said vehicles, he wasn't talking about cars or bicycles. He was referring to the special mounts that the deities used. Ganesh, the elephant-headed god of new beginnings, rode a mouse. Must be a really muscular mouse, Aru always thought. The goddess of luck, Lakshmi, rode an owl. Indra, the king of the gods, rode a majestic seven-headed horse.
The sleeper intends to slow down the heavens, too, said Urvashi, her eyes widening.
He means to chop our legs from beneath us. But if he has truly awakened, then why are the agents of the heavens... them? She flailed a hand at Aru and Minnie. Minnie tightened her hold on her backpack, but she wasn't glaring like Aru. Her eyes were shining, as if she were about to cry.
Because we're Pandavas,
Aru said, forcing her voice not to shake.
And it's your job, or...
Dharma, whispered Boo. It's their sacred duty to help the Pandavas fight the sleeper one last time.
Fight? One last time? This was all news to Aru. Even the guardian's faces turned stiff at his words.
Right. That, said Aru. So you have to help us.
Oh, really? Said Urvashi. Her voice turned devastatingly calm. If you're Pandavas, then prove it. Hanuman stood up on his throne.
We have never forced anyone to undergo the claiming before they were ready. The Pandavas were always trained, at least.
He stared down at Aru and Minnie.
They're only children.
According to the rules, said Urvashi, smiling cruelly, it must be unanimously agreed by the guardians in residence that we believe they are semi-divine. I do not believe, and if they're only children, they shouldn't bother. Aru was about to speak, but someone else got there first.
We'll prove it, said Minnie.
Her hands were clenched into fists beside her. Aru felt a strange burst of pride in the surprisingly brave Minnie. But Boo did not seem enthusiastic. He fluttered to his former throne, his face as pinched and solemn as a pigeon could look.
Let the claiming commence, called Urvashi.
The court of the sky zoomed back into the shadows, and where the circle of thrones had once surrounded them, now something else did. 5 gigantic statues. If they weren't already in the sky, Aru might have guessed that the statues' heads would have scraped the clouds. Aru's heart pounded, her previous burst of confidence gone.
You keep saying claiming, but what are we claiming exactly? Like insurance? Deductions? Pressed Minnie.
She shrugged off Aru's bewildered expression.
What? My mom's a tax attorney.
You are not claiming anything, said Boo. It is the gods that will do the claiming. Each of the Pandava brothers had a different divine father. You are about to find out who yours is.
From her mom's stories, Aru knew that there were 5 main brothers. The first 3, Yudhisthira, Arjuna, and Bhima, were the sons of the god of death, the god of the heavens, and the god of the wind, respectively. The twin Pandavas, Nakula and Sahadeva, were born by the blessing of the Ashvins, the twin gods of medicine and sunset. And there was one more, Karna, the secret Pandava, the son of the sun god. Aru wasn't sure why they were all called brothers when they didn't even have the same mom. But maybe it went back to what Boo had talked about, that they didn't have to be blood-related to be siblings. There was a shared divinity-ness in their souls that was just as good as blood. Or something like that.
Wait! So, like, they're just going to reach out from the heavens, weigh us, and say, yup, that seems like mine?
Demanded Aru.
What about documentation?
Shrieked Minnie, her voice hitching with panic.
Is this like a conversation, or are there needles involved, like in a paternity test?
If Boo knew the answers, he had zero interest in sharing. Ignoring their questions, he walked toward one of the giant statues.
Pranama, as I say the gods' names, he said.
Pranama was when you touched the feet of your elders. Aru had to do that when she went to the temple and ran into the priest or someone much, much older and well-respected.
I always have to do that when my mom's parents visit, whispered Minnie. My grandfather has really hairy feet.
What about your dad's parents? Asked Aru.
They're Filipino. My Lola only likes her feet touched if I'm giving her a foot rub.
Shh, said Boo.
How will we know if one of the gods is claiming us? Aru asked.
Simple. They'll choose to keep you alive.
What?
Cried Minnie and Aru at the same time. The walls of ribbon light started flickering.
Don't worry, said Boo airily. I've only been wrong about someone being a Pandava once.
So that means that person... Watch out! Screamed Minnie, pushing Aru.
The ribbon light slowly changed into a bunch of tiny bright spots, like stars. But then they came closer, and Aru saw that they weren't stars at all. They were arrow tips, and they were heading straight for them.
8. Who's your daddy?
Aru watched a lot of movies, probably more than was good for her, not that she cared. According to movies, right about now was when she should be seeing her life flash before her eyes, while a bunch of people tearfully screamed, "Stay with us! Don't follow the light!" The arrows grew bigger the closer they got. They cut through the air, and the sound they made was halfway between a wince and a whistle. Aru's gaze darted across the empty sky. Forget the rules from a movie. She'd follow anything, even a suspiciously bright light at the end of a tunnel, if it meant getting out of here. But then the rain of arrows stopped short. It was as if someone had just hit pause.
Don't worry, said Boo. The arrows won't actually hit until you've paid your respects to the five father gods of the Mahabharata.
Aru and Minnie were crouched and huddled together. Both of them were staring up at the quivering arrows, hovering just a couple of feet over their heads. Maybe it was her imagination, but the arrows seemed really annoyed that they had to wait a bit before they got to launch themselves at Aru and Minnie. Great, said Aru.
Dharma Raja, we acknowledge you, said Boo in a deep voice.
The statue of the Dharma Raja, Lord of Justice and Death, loomed above them. He was as gray as ash. Two sharp tusks curled from under his lip. In one hand, he held his Danda stick, the rod used for punishing souls in the afterlife. In the other, he held the noose he used to rope the souls of the dead. Aru's breath quickened as she remembered which Pandava was his son, Yudhisthira. He was the oldest Pandava brother and was known for being noble and just and wise. Aru wasn't sure she wanted the Dharma Raja to be her dad, being known for being the wisest and most just. Way too much pressure.
Pranama,
hissed Boo. Minnie and Aru rushed forward and touched his feet.
Lord Indra,
said Boo. The statue of Indra, king of the heavens, was next. His skin was the color of a thunderstorm. In his hand, he held the weapon Vajra, the thunderbolt. There was no way Aru could be the daughter of Indra. His Pandava son was Arjuna, the triumphant. Out of all the Pandava brothers, Arjuna was the most famous. He had the most adventures and was known for his incredible skill with the bow and arrow. If being wise and just was pressure, imagine being considered the greatest hero out of the entire story. No thank you, thought Aru.
Lord Vayu.
Huh, thought Aru. That wouldn't be so bad. Vayu, Lord of the Winds, stirred a slight breeze. He was dark-skinned and looked like the handsome star of a Bollywood film. He held a spinning flag that heralded the directions. His Pandava son was Bhima the Strong. Bhima was known for having a ridiculously large appetite, being super strong, and also having a temper, all of which Aru thought she could deal with.
The Ashvins, Nasatya and Dasra.
Two statues with the heads of horses glowed. They were the gods of sunrise and sunset and medicine. Their Pandava sons were also twins, Nakula the beautiful and Sahadeva the wise. Definitely would not mind being known for beauty, thought Aru. She still had some misgivings about the whole wisdom thing. Minnie and Aru paid their respects to each. When the final pranama was done, the two of them stood back to back within the circle of gods. Above her, Aru heard the impatient hissing of the arrows. They were trembling, not like a leaf that's about to fall from a branch, but like some sort of rabid beast that's legitimately trembling with excitement over tearing you apart. Too late, Aru remembered Boo's reassurance that the arrows wouldn't actually hit them until they had finished their pranama. They definitely finished. A sharp sound cut the air, as if someone had dropped a handful of sewing needles. An arrow landed near Aru's foot. Minnie screamed. A few more arrows pelted the ground. Not all at once. No, that would be too easy. It was as if someone was tempting the gods. Either of these kids striking your fancy? Want to save one? Here, I'll give you a second to think. Aru threw up her hands, trying to see through the lace of her fingers.
Move,
screamed Minnie, attempting to shove Aru out of the circle of statues. Aru teetered backward. When she looked at where she'd been standing, she saw a handful of arrows stuck in the air.
"Stay calm," shouted Boo.
"Who can stay calm when arrows are being shot at them?" she screamed.
"A god," said Boo.
"But we're not gods," said Minnie.
"Ah, good point."
Minnie hefted her backpack and scuttled closer to Aru. "We have to hide," she hissed. But what was the point of that? The arrows would find them regardless. Aru peered up at the statues and their cold, impassive faces. "Don't they care?" Aru tried to pry off one of the statue's toes to hurl it back at the arrows. Not that that would do anything, but at least it would feel useful. But the stone didn't yield. More arrows landed in front of her. One was an inch from her pinky. Another whispered past her ear. Now the arrows looked like a colony of bats. "This is it," moaned Minnie, holding up her backpack. She pressed herself tightly against Vayu's stone legs. Aru braced herself. The arrow points were spinning toward her, blowing wind against her face. Aru flung out her hand, eyes pinched closed. "Stop!" The whistling wind went silent. Aru blinked open. Her hand was still extended. For a moment, she wondered whether she had stopped the arrows herself. But then she saw what was protecting her. A net. It crackled and shimmered as if its mesh were made out of bolts of lightning. Her feet weren't touching the ground anymore. She was floating, haloed by light. At that moment, she had the most absurd desire to do two things. One, sing the Circle of Life song from the Lion King. Two, throw up. Being dangled by an unseen force? Yep, no thanks. But then she looked around and realized the arrows had vanished. Also, the statues had changed positions. Before, she had been leaning against the god of the winds. But now it was Indra, the god of thunder, who looked down at her. His face was still made of stone, but his expression had changed from indifferent to amused, as if he had just realized who Aru was. His daughter. She, Aru Shah, was the daughter of Indra, king of the heavens. 9. The Three Keys. Many Hindus don't eat beef, just like how some of Aru's Jewish and Muslim classmates didn't eat pork. Every time it was hamburger day at school, she would have to get the overly chewy portobello mushroom thing that looked, and probably tasted, like dinosaur hide. Her classmates would look at her pityingly. "That sucks. Hamburgers are the best," someone would say. "You're missing out." Aru disagreed. Pizza was the best. Besides, how could she be missing out on something she'd never had? Maybe it was like that with fathers. She and her mom were just fine by themselves, thanks for asking. Then again, a father is not a hamburger. A hamburger was something you could choose not to have. Aru had never had a choice when it came to not having a dad. When she thought about it for too long, she got furious. How could her dad have left them? Aru considered herself fairly awesome. Granted, she was a little biased. And her mom. Her mom was beautiful and brilliant and elegant. But she was also sad. Maybe if her dad was around, her mom would be happier. The fact that someone had dared to make her mom miserable only made Aru angrier. But now that she was staring at the truth, she felt, well, struck by lightning. Which just seemed ironic now. She'd never had a hint that Indra could be her dad. Or had she? Aru had always loved thunderstorms. Sometimes, when she had nightmares, a thunder and lightning storm would rise up out of nowhere, illuminating the sky like a light.